I had my tablet on me at the moment. As I was reading the questions to the speakers, I got the alert and I got a message from my son's kindergarten saying that there is a potential threat of a missile attack and the children are in a bomb shelter as we're up on stage in Lisbon. And I turned to the audience and I said that. And I think most of the people in the audience gasped at that moment.
Welcome to Tech Talks, hosted by myself, David Savage, and powered by Nash Squared. On today's show, we are talking to V7's Julia. She is based in Kyiv. The 24th of February, so tomorrow, is the second anniversary of the escalation of conflict in Ukraine and the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. So we are talking all about life in Kyiv and how that has changed for Julia in the last couple of years, and also her insights into marketing and public relations. But before that, I'm joined by Akish. How are you?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well.
Now, Akish, obviously, some people will know your name, they will know your voice, and if they've listened to the show a number of times, they might know where you're from. But would you like to tell us a little bit about your background, your family background?
Yeah. Yeah, it's my family background. It's also mine, actually. So I am of Pakistani heritage, and I was actually born in Pakistan. So I'm what you'd probably class with my parents at the time, and, an economic migrant, really. So, came over to the UK about 27, 28 years ago. So I class myself as a British Pakistani. So yeah.
And tell me where Tech Talks is charting.
I'm gonna say Pakistan.
It's now charting that you've in asked Pakistan.
Is it really? Wow! Wow!
Along with Tajikistan, Georgia, Sri Lanka, Romania, Poland. These are the non-English speaking countries we're charting in, which fascinates me. But yeah, Pakistan. Yeah. Clearly you have a fan base, mate.
I mean, honestly, I feel quite proud, but wow, that's amazing. I'm actually really touched, and if anyone is listening, please reach out to the show. We
clearly,
have various
they are.
Yeah,
clearly,
but well, no,
sitting,
well,
sitting in Lahore.
Lahore, Karachi, Islamabad, any of the bigger cities.
But the nice sunshine. What would they be doing? What would they be eating and drinking whilst listening to Tech Talks?
Biryanis of some sort. Yeah, kebabs. Yeah. As is very Pakistani, they'll probably be sipping on tea. Tea's a very big thing there.
I'm all for that.
Point of the day.
I think listening to Tech Talks with a biryani and a tea sounds pretty ideal. I mean, it's chucking it down with rain as I look out of my window, so I quite like
it is,
yeah. Sunny weather, to be perfectly frank. But
it's a lovely time to go at the moment, before it gets really hot in the summer.
Yeah, friend of the show, Sonia Barlow, she's out there at the moment. I noticed from Instagram, so maybe she's there. Maybe she's one of our listeners in Pakistan right now.
Could be, but I think she's moved to the far. Well,
she's Malaysia. Now, isn't
she? Yeah, Malaysia, Singapore. But I know she was there here not too long ago. So, if there is someone who's not Sonia Barlow listening in Pakistan, please do get in touch.
Clearly, I don't think Sonia alone is reasonable. It's the reason for us charting.
No. Please do get in touch with us. I would love to hear from you.
There you go. The Akish effect. We'll call it that. I don't know. I don't know what's the reason for us charting in Romania, but
Get in touch either way.
Thank you if you are listening in these countries. It always amazes us and is very touching, really. Anyway, we'll put that to one side. We've got a really serious topic of conversation today. We're going to hand over to our interview with Julia and myself and Akish. We'll be back afterwards. So joining me today is Julia, Chief Brand and Communications Officer. You work for a business called V7.
V7.
And you're joining me Oh, V7, sorry, not Vi. Yes, V7. All to everyone who's listening, I just had a long chat with Julia about the correct pronunciation of her name, and it never occurs to me that I get the name of the company wrong. But there we are. How are you today?
I'm excellent. Thank you so much for that, Dave. I'll be honest, you're not the first one to get that pronunciation wrong. So,
look, whereabouts are you based? Because you're in the Ukraine.
Yes, I'm based just on the outskirts of Kyiv at the moment. But originally, I was born in Ukraine, grew up in Canada, and then I moved here a few years ago. So, yes.
And we I reached out to you because I saw some of your posts and your content on the back of Web Summit, where you spoke this year. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the talk that you moderated on stage? Because I think you'll do a far better job of explaining than I would.
Absolutely. Which one, though? I moderated 4 talks at Web Summit this year. It was a very busy Web Summit for me. I literally had talks where I had to run from one stage to another. But yeah, I think the talk that you're referring to is the discussion on Kyiv's digital future with Volodymyr Klitschko and Oleg Polivinko of Kyiv Digital.
Yeah. Yes, but not perhaps because of the starry names attached to it, but I think because of what happened during it in terms of contextualizing the conversation that you were having.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sort of touching on Web Summit, I have been moderating big events for a very long time now because of my career. Prior to switching to communications, I was a journalist for a while. So I've done Web Summit in the past, but when the war happened, when Russia invaded Ukraine, fully invaded Ukraine because they invaded in 2014, I wasn't ready to talk about Ukraine. I wasn't ready to talk about that personal aspect because obviously it was very, very deep for me and very touching. So this year when they invited me to moderate the talk, and as we were talking about Kyiv's digital future, about digitalization and all the aspects that are concerning the tech world, there was an air raid alert that every Ukrainian gets on their phone. You get a Google alert, you get an app, whatever is installed, or Kyiv Digital, whatever is installed on your phone or a tablet. I had my tablet on me at the moment. As I was reading the questions to the speakers, I got the alert and I got a message from my son's kindergarten saying that there is a potential threat of a missile attack and children are in a bomb shelter as we're up on stage in Lisbon. And I turned to the audience and I said that. And I think most of the people in the audience gasped at that moment because that very much brought the conversation to something that was very real for me and very real for a lot of people, right? But when you're on stage with these big names and you're talking about something that seems to be very much a concept that's very far away for most folks, right, in the audience, and then the speaker says, hey, my child is in a bunker at this moment, I think that struck a chord with a lot of folks out there.
Yeah, I imagine it probably did strike a chord. But even since early 2022, it feels like it's been pushed down the agenda of news simply because of the constant disruption and the news headlines that seem to pile on top of one another with one crisis after another. And when you say, I suppose, that people in the audience audibly gasped, perhaps it brought it home to them that this is still happening, but at the same time, unfortunately, a lot of people, I suppose, can empathize and sympathize with disruption and a world that seems slightly more fragile, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, to a lot of people, and I come from a journalism background, and I always say this, if we know the headlines out there, if it bleeds, it leads. That's how the news business sort of defines what's the top story. Unfortunately, that's the case for most newsrooms out there in the world. War happens in cycles, right? There is a hot phase, there is a bit of a slower phase, and it depends on, you know, the type of conflict that's out there, and depends what's actually happening, you know, when obviously active missiles are flying your way and there are bombings happening on the first, second, third day. People are in dire shock of what's going on. But when you hear about it for half a year, when you hear about it for a year, when you hear about it for a year and a half, and it's going to be 2 years this February, I think people tend to, I hate to say it this way, but it's very much true. People tend to forget and get tired of hearing the same story because they're not a part of it. They're not living in that situation. And another case and point here is, you know, there are other stories out there that need to be heard, and there are other situations in the world that need to be showcased, you know. And news cycle is a cycle for a reason, right? So I think me mentioning the fact that my child is in a bomb shelter at the moment, I think us talking about it, I think that reminded everybody that it's still happening today. And I think that that is the point that everybody took home after that conversation.
You are still in Kyiv and have been throughout this conflict and working. And I've been very lucky to be given time by people in similar situations in Ukraine who have continued to work and continued to remain under threat of bombardment and hostility, and yet have continued to work and found ways around the situation. How have you found that experience?
Oh, there's a great quote that I've said in the past, and it's not attributed to me, it's attributed to the CEO that I work with. But work brings a sense of normalcy. There's a bit of a sense of a routine to what you do, right? When you open up your laptop, if you work remotely, right? I work remotely. So if you open up your laptop, you log on, you start messaging people, you start talking to people. I'm in communications, I'm in public relations. You have that aspect of life is okay. Everything is normal. Everything's fine. And then reality hits, and obviously a lot of people that I work with, they are based in Ukraine, but some people are not. We have a lot of my team that are based in Portugal, in the States. Some of my teammates actually had to evacuate Ukraine, and they have nowhere to go back. So I've been lucky. I have somewhere to go back to, right? I have a place where I can live and work and continue my life. I have folks that have nothing left because of a debris from a missile hitting their home because of the active conflict in their area. So again, it's those aspects where you start appreciating things like work and regular aspects of life much more. And the human body and the human brain are amazing in terms of stress resilience and trying to get somewhat accustomed to living in a situation that we are currently in, right? I wouldn't wish it upon anybody, but when you're in this type of environment, you do have to know when to react properly to an air raid alert. You do have to seek shelter when, you know, my desk is near a window. I know that I wouldn't be talking to you if there was an active air raid alert at the moment. I'd go downstairs to a safe room and I'd probably continue the conversation from there. So it's one of those aspects. You have to, you know, keep your safety in mind. You have to be smart about it. But work definitely brings a sense of life goes on. The world is still here and we're still here and we have to keep living.
The world is still here and you do have to keep living. What allowances, though, have international businesses given to the fact that you are in your home, you don't want to be in a situation where you are forced out? And yet for them, I suppose it might feel quite distant and it might feel like, you know, it's slipped down the news cycle. Are people still being kind, being understanding and giving those allowances?
Here's the thing, Dave, I'll be very frank. Unless you're in it, you're not going to know what it's like, right? And as I've mentioned that, right? So yes, there is an aspect of empathy. And when people talk to you and you're like, oh boy, and you're okay, and I'm like, everything's fine. We're chatting, we're talking, we have a business call. Let's continue the conversation. But it's one of those aspects where yes, it is drastically different from February of last year. It is drastically different in terms of conversation. And a lot of people were asking me whether I would evacuate and go back to Canada at one point. But ultimately, it was my choice to remain here. That's something that's very crucial and important, right? And I wouldn't want to burden anybody else with essentially my problems, right? So it's one of those aspects where you have to talk to clients in a way where, yes, if there is an emergency situation happening, that can happen to anybody anywhere, quite frankly. You do have to bring that up, but I wouldn't I wouldn't want people to use that as an excuse not to continue the relationships with their clients and their and international companies. I don't think that should be the case.
Now, you were able to give a very, very extreme example of storytelling with your situation on stage at the beginning. But you've mentioned communications, brand, PR.
Oh, yeah.
And I suppose when Ukraine slips down the news cycle, actually storytelling is a way to get people to connect. How valued do you think storytelling is in our industry and technology? Do people really kind of grasp the power of it to the degree that you think they should?
I think since COVID happened, since the pandemic hit, I think the world started to understand the value of public relations and communication. Because ultimately, when it comes to the tech industry, I'd like to say it this way. When it comes to the B2B aspect of the tech industry, right, PR was never the focus. It was always sort of on the back burner when it comes to why do we need to go to an event? Why do we need to get this publication? Everybody knows about us as is. So I think since the pandemic and the fact that people cannot go face to face, you have to start working remotely. You have to get your message out there. You have to talk about yourself as much as possible so people know about you. I think that has come to the forefront much more. And I think that aspect of talking about your business, talking about your story, but not just your business, people ultimately buy from people. And I think sharing your story is something that's crucial for anybody. Whatever situation you're in, whatever your background is, whatever your experience is, I think ultimately everything is PR today. And storytelling is a very, very crucial aspect in terms of the conversations that we should be having in the tech world.
And what mistakes do you think people make when storytelling, if they're trying to tell their story, but it doesn't quite land? Why do you think that might be?
Mistake number one, they try to sell their product, they try to sell the company. All they have to do is talk about their experience, their situation, their way of building their product, how they got there in the first place. Because that story has to be relatable and somebody has to have that emotional connection to the product. When you just first straight up sell to somebody else, I don't know about yourself, but in terms of myself, I tend to get turned off by that. And when somebody just pushes the product onto me, I'm like, well, I'm not interested. But tell me about how you got into this industry. Tell me why this product will make a difference for me as a person. Tell me why you believe this is the groundbreaking tech invention for the planet, for the humanity. I think that is something that's crucial for us. And a lot of people forget about that. A lot of people forget about the fact that press releases are, they're great to have in terms of just coverage, but they're dry and they don't have that storytelling aspect to them. So it's not about a press release. It's about a conversation that you're going to have in a podcast, in a webinar, whether up on stage at a tech conference. It's about that aspect of human to human connection. And that's what we definitely need today, much more of it in the tech world.
You're in this rarefied position where you do sit on stage with really incredible people in the case of Klitschko, but not, and that's not to disparage anyone else that you host on stage, because everyone is doing fantastic work out there. But what do you think your view is on where we're heading as an industry from that position of being able to talk to numerous different people and kind of, I suppose, stitching the thread between their various different stories?
Well, I think in terms of the industry, AI is not going to take all our jobs. Let's start with that, because I think that is everybody's concern at the moment.
At the time of recording, the last podcast that I posted, one of the headline catchphrases from it, for want of a better word, was McKinsey thinking that in 5 to 7 years, 70% of all business business processes in all occupations would be carried out by Gen AI.
Well, listen, we also had Blade Runner as a movie at one point in time, and everybody thought that was our future. So I have a few things to say about that. I do believe that people are still here for a reason. Otherwise, the planet would shake us off and replace us all with robots and technology. But in terms of, yes, where the industry is heading and where we're heading, I think events are coming back. And I did a small poll on my LinkedIn asking people what type of event they're still interested in. And it was an overwhelming majority in terms of an actual face-to-face conversation. I think people miss that aspect a lot, right? So I think the industry is heading the route of more connections, something that's much more in-depth and something that has much more authenticity to it. And I think that comes to any product that we develop today, anything that is out there in terms of business collaborations, anything that's out there in terms of even acquisitions. I think people are looking for authenticity when it comes to the messaging, authenticity when it comes to the product positioning, and ultimately how we approach everything in the industry. But in terms of, you know, high profile speakers, or whether or not that's an aspect that sort of that should be the thread, I think high profile speakers and people with, you know, celebrity factor to their name, right? And having worked in the journalism with the field in Canada, the United States, and Ukraine, I do have a lot of high profile celebrities as friends. But I think ultimately that sort of is the, it essentially is the crowd pleaser moment. It is the person that will bring people into the room at a larger conference, at a larger event, because everybody knows them. And it is important to keep the conversation going post that talk, after what was happening on stage, after what was said. I think it's important to have those conversations between us, not just focusing on the celebrity factor, but also between us in the industry, and talking about whether that's digitalization for Ukraine post victory. I hope that's going to happen very soon, but whether that's that case, or whether it's the future of longevity, or whether it's the future of sleep for kids, because that's another panel that I did at Web Summit. So it's one of those things where the conversation that you're going to have after that panel discussion that you've attended, that you've listened to because of that celebrity factor that ultimately drew you in at first.
Last question then that pops into my head, given what you're saying there. What conferences do you think people should be thinking about? I often get asked by people, what conferences would you go to? So it's quite nice to ask someone who is also in this situation the same question and say, if you're in tech, and I know that it really depends on what you're looking for, of course. But if we can speak quite generally, what conferences do you think?
I like to have a very nice split between conferences. If you're sales oriented, you should be going to smaller events that have your target audience, that have five or six panels at best. And most of those panelists, you'll know them because you've corresponded with them. If you're very much sales oriented, that should be your way of approaching events. If you're much more public relations and marketing oriented, you should aim at larger events like Web Summit, Collision, or Slush, or any big tech conference that's out there, to get your name out there, to have your company out there as much as possible, to raise that brand awareness, because it, ultimately it's much bigger coverage. So have that split in between sales-oriented events and PR and marketing events. And I think that will give you a better and bigger understanding of what you want to achieve when it comes to conferences. And another thing, what is your ultimate goal at a conference? Because a lot of people approach Web Summit, oh, I'm going to have so many leads there. Well, no, it's about networking. And it's ultimately about who you're going to meet there, who's going to introduce you to another person, and that other person will introduce you to that person, and they're going to recommend you to a potential client, and that's how you're going to get that deal. It's not about scoring the sale right away. It's about the connections and ultimately the meetings you're going to have that lead to potential deals and their closures. So it's how you treat an event. That's another aspect that's very, very important. But I love big conferences. I love the buzz of them. I love being on stage. Love meeting new people, talking to people afterwards. So I do enjoy larger conferences myself, much more than smaller sales oriented events. So you know where my vote is.
I think that's great advice. I really appreciate you giving up some time and talking to us. And hopefully, you never know, given your time spent in Canada and the mention of Collision, perhaps we'll see each other in Toronto.
Oh, we definitely will. I have my ticket booked already.
Just very quickly before we move on from today's interview, it is mind-boggling sitting here to hear someone say, my desk is next to the window. if there was an air raid alert right now, we wouldn't be talking. That bit you kind of go, yeah, fair enough, of course not. What would happen is I'd move downstairs to the bunker and then I'd continue the conversation. And for me, that, and then we'd continue the conversation, like, air raid warning, missile attack, but you know what? We get somewhere safe and we just get on with it. Speaks to the resilience of people and the realism of how people can adapt, but also, as I say, resilience to keep going and to be there working, trying to build that semblance of life, normal life, regardless of the external circumstances.
Yeah. I mean, it just puts into perspective people's courageousness and bravery. I mean, put it this way, I'm in the office today, and like you've already alluded to, the weather is horrible. It's raining down, raining it down. And I wore some, you know, footwear, which probably isn't rain friendly. And, you know, I had a real big moan for about a good 20 minutes, right, about having wet socks or, you know, that sort of thing. But my desk is also near a window, but I don't face that level of threat in my working day or normal living day, right? And when you were mentioning those things, and when I was hearing back in the interview, it just made me think and put things into perspective about, you know, there's a saying in movies, you know, called, you know, someone having big cojones. I don't know if I can say the right thing, but, you know, these, the people that are working, thriving and still producing in these war stricken states and locations, they've got the biggest cojones going, I reckon, Dave.
Obviously, Julia's comments speak for themselves in the interview. Truly astonishing, really, the as I've said, the adaptability of people to circumstances, and the fact that, you know, she states, it's my choice to be here. You know, she's got the potential that she could relocate overseas, but she wants to be in Kyiv. But then equally, she wants to get on, and she doesn't necessarily want sympathy, but also she wants people to remember. She understands that the news cycle is a news cycle, but she wants people to remember. And we do get tired of news, and it feels distant and it slips. Yeah, certainly this weekend we should remember that that is still very much an active situation for a lot of people, and there are also a lot of economic displaced migrants as a consequence who are looking for work, and we will be talking about that more in the coming weeks with some other guests. So yes, strength to everyone going through those difficult times. Julia, thank you very much for sharing your outlook on the show today. Now, different topic before we wrap up. It's Friday's show. I went on to UK Tech News, UKTN, always a good source of news. A startup developing a wearable to tackle period pain raises 1.8 million. Right. Listen to this, Akish. Sapphire Neuroscience, a London-based medtech startup specializing in women's health, has raised 1.8 million in funding. It was founded in 2021. Okay. This is fascinating. The startup's flagship product is a headband called Nettle that uses low current electrical pulses to target areas of the brain responsible for pain and mood regulation. And the company claims that its headband can safely provide targeted relief to the pain experienced from menstrual cycle. So the startup's tech could mitigate mental distress felt during the cycle by supporting cognitive function. That sounds utterly mind-boggling and transformative.
And it sounds like the future.
Yeah, it sounds like science fiction.
Yeah. That's what it sounds like. Like, you put something on. I mean, you know, neither of us have donned a hairband for as long as I've known you. But, Okay, well, there we go. But the fact that you can just put something external near your body, and that allows the electrical pulses and the way it's been programmed and set up to then target certain parts of your body and then to be specific to other people, or to different people is amazing. Like,
and that's got to be better than some kind of drug based release,
yeah,
right? Because it's not chemical. You kind of imagine that it must be better in the long term as well somehow. Like, amazing. I mean, look, there was a study in 2019 that found, this is again in the article, that found that more than a third of women reported not being able to perform all their daily duties due to menstrual symptoms, okay? And I know my wife, for example, sometimes it's just crippling. And I know that her boss, it's the same thing. Like, so much distress. It's not discussed openly enough, hence deciding, let's talk about it on the podcast, two guys talking about it, because actually it does need, it can't just be women talking about this problem. But so, you know, our teams are made up of gender-balanced teams, and as a guy, I forget that, you know, half of your workforce effectively is going through something that I have no idea about and can't really relate to. So to hear that there's funding going in for solutions is a really positive thing.
100%, and especially where, I don't know if you've seen there were news on or one of the news headlines for today was, you know, we talk about the menstrual cycle, but you know, things like long elongated menstrual cycles and menopause and all these sorts of things, there's new regulation coming out for companies. But when you hear about this kind of technology, not to say that companies say, oh, you can't have time off because you know, we have this technology, but it's to say that these things are being discussed as part of engaging
and investment to alleviate the symptoms is great.
No, exactly. But also it goes to show that, you know, organizations, and there are specific technology, you know, and in pioneers and investors that are passionate about this, and therefore, you know, keeping and wanting to, you know, stay on par with the trials and tribulations that a female does face. So
exactly. But look, we wanted to flag that. I'll include the link in the show notes to that particular article if you're interested in finding out more. But look, that's the weekend. Akish, thank you very much for your time. We'll be back on Monday. We're going to have three shows for you from next week. So we'll be back on Monday, and we'll be also with you on Wednesday and Friday. Wednesday and Friday specifically, when we're talking about Black History Month, which is currently being celebrated and observed in the US. Tech Talks is hosted and edited by David Savage. It is produced by Nash Squared. And we have special thanks to Lemzy for supplying music to this show.